113.
It's never straight up and down.
It's never straight up and down. It's never straight up and down. It's never straight up and down. Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Wanna live in a wiggly world. 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 Wanna live in a wiggly world.
A wiggly world, a wiggly world. Oh, I better open the mic now. I don't even have anything ready for the questions and things like this at your letters and whatnot, but I better open it up now, because if I don't open it now, it might keep getting pushed back and back and back the later it gets in the day, which it's already far later than I usually ever start. And of course, I say this all as I'm going, oops, there's a humongous sent email, going back and forth, trying to get things straightened out with one of the domains that I have been given charge of for some reason, even though I really have little to do with it. But nonetheless, sometimes Wiggly is the go-to guy to get things done. Speaking of getting things done, one thing I have not been getting done is sleeping. So I figured I'd start off today with a little bit about sleep deprivation and how it can be useful and how it cannot be useful and when you should just knock it off. And I will do that as soon as I wrap up what I'm trying to work on here. But yet, still, I only started about an hour ago, and I'm already a minute and 12 seconds into the recording. So that's pretty good. A lot better than being 12 and 13 hours behind. All right, yes, sleep deprivation. Where was I? Yes. Who am I? Where am I? Sleep deprivation. So my experience with this is that, number one, I've experienced it plenty of times in my life, and I'm sure you will as well. Sometimes I was up for several days in a row. And in my youth, in my 20s, in my 30s, I think I was fine with that, early 30s, probably, I'm referring to. And, oh boy, you could do a lot of creative things, no doubt. But sitting down and trying to do a coherent podcast and trying to have words come out of your mouth and formulate something of substance and something that you want to be not as abstract as perhaps something very artistic, something like this podcast here. Sleep deprivation does not help that at all, because it does make your lips and your tongue and your mouth and your teeth and the various vocal cords, higher and lower, not cooperate. They don't tend to cooperate so much with what you want them to do. So you end up flubbing things, you end up sounding like a babbling idiot, and you end up laying down about 111 podcasts called The Wiggly World. That's what happens there. But I really wanted to hop on this morning. If you don't know, I have a lot of things going on in the next week to come. Tuesday, Chiz and I will leave. We will depart from, I guess, right around Washington, D.C. There, somewhere around there, Virginia, I'm sure. And we will get on the auto train, load her up, and with our Chizzy's PT Cruiser. And I guess it will be 50% mine in about a week. No, I might have health care. That's going to be kind of neat. That's going to be something new for me, a new experience. I'm actually going to get various things that are definitely wrong with me checked out. There's some things I've been sitting on, and I don't mean that literally. I mean that figuratively. Everything's good with the old caboose, except it's a giant hairy rug, which that needs a shave before I go on my vacation, because who wants to lay out on the beach and out of your Speedo is this fur carpet, you know, no good. But I will have health care, and that would be kind of neat, because when you get 40, in your 40s, there are certain things that your body does that are completely beyond your control. And of course, this happens to people in their 20s and as well. I mean, Jesus, I think I started going bald when I was like 18 or 19. So you have that, those type of things that happen. You have gray hairs that can happen when you're 18 or 19. You have a lot of things. And but as your body ages, it kind of gets wackier and wackier and crazier and crazier. And it is amazing, the advances in medicine. And especially now, we don't have to worry about medicine being set back to, you know, throwing a stone against your forehead like we did under the previous administration. And that's a political jab right there. And by the way, how about that dope Obama and his stupid peace prize, Nobel Peace Prize? What a dope, what a stupid schmuck that guy is. What a dummy in that Nobel. Now listen, I'm not saying a Nobel Peace Prize haven't been given out to the wrong people before. You know, Mother Teresa springs to mind. She impoverished her country probably more than any dictator ever could have. Her local Calcutta, Calcuttians. But that's for another podcast, and that's for other people to complain about, actually. And you know, I saw the jabs already, even among my Facebook friends, and that's fine, that's cool, whatever. It doesn't diminish the fact that, you know, our frickin' president just got awarded a very prestigious award from the world, okay? So that reflects upon its country. So if you want to say he's a Star Search winner and Teen Pop Choice Award winner or whatever, you're just, that's reflecting all back on you, okay? He is, unfortunately, or fortunately, and really it doesn't even come into play at all. He is completely neutrally our representative for this country, the United States, in which we live, if you do live here. So, you know, and before it was George W. Bush, once again, whose favorite author and philosopher was Jesus Christ. God, can you believe that was real? There are few, I mean, I know a lot of stupid people, okay? I know tons of stupid people, and I'm quite ignorant myself plenty of times, and I'm completely getting off track about sleep deprivation. But that's what happens when you get sleep deprived. So, yeah, when you're 40, there's various parts of your body that can go nuts and grow all crazy. Now, it is also fantastic news that hopefully science will progress, especially in the United States. It'd be great, you know. I mean, why should other countries be just stamping on a "don't tread on me"? Well, you're getting tread on, and you're getting left behind. So it'll be nice that we can, once again, hopefully science can go forward in the United States of America. And I just watched a recent episode of, what's this called here? Popular Science Presents Doggies on a Hovercraft. Please, listen, why doesn't someone search the internet for people that can create theme songs? Bobby's on a hovercraft. You're walking down the street and you're reading the paper in your glasses. Horrible. Worst theme song ever. And I hope that's not really Mark Mothersbaum. Just some imitator. Or if it is Mark, well, he did do Rugrats then. So, hey, everything's good. I love Rugrats, yeah. You know, you got to experiment. You got to try different things. I like it. I really can appreciate that. But this Popular Science is great. Like it a lot. I mean, it's no replacement or successor to, what was that called? Zap? No, I can't. See what I mean? This, when your brain goes into reclusion, it hides from you. Yeesh. Yeah. Josh Zepps, you're really going to love me now. I can't even remember the name of your program, but I loved it. Brink, of course, Brink. But this Popular Science had a good episode, and most of the things I see on there have already been exposed to, but something I did was not exposed to was these great advances in what they hope to be markers for disease, where you will be able to give your administer yourself a test, a little blood work test. And because of the way that these slides are created, the different markers for certain diseases will be able to give you almost an instant result as to whether you're showing signs of these diseases months or years before you would succumb to these diseases. And it might, in fact, be these markers that appear in the bloodstream that give the old green light, give the old go-ahead for these diseases to start to work on your body. And, you know, make the DNA, RNA changes. I don't know what. I don't have any. This is free ball on Friday, so there's nothing before me. But you might be able to then take a medication that will simply stop that process from ever occurring. So those signals will never get sent, and you will not succumb to those diseases, or at least you have a very high probability that you will not. Something around the 98-99%, I believe, which is huge. And once again, I could be completely wrong. But nonetheless, it's fantastic. They hope to have more progress on this topic, I believe, within the next 10 years. So that's something to look forward to. That's great. Really good news. Really good news. Now, the question is, should we allow people that believe in faith healing and only pray for to get better and keep sick ones in their prayers, should we allow them access to these tests and these pills? That's what I want to know. I say we put it on the honor system. No, I say we put it on the honor system. Allow anyone to be able to take advantage of this, no matter what their beliefs. And if they truly believe that, of course, people are healed through faith and that all diseases are caused by demons running into you that may one day jump out of you and into a pack of hogs, then they should not take this just under their own beliefs. You know, they believe that they shouldn't need this because the disease is caused by spirits, and then they should opt out, and that should be their choice. But I'll leave that up to them. I'll leave that up to the believer. I have a lot of equity. I'm feeling very equitable today, very fair. Once again, probably as a result of the sleep deprivation. But how can sleep deprivation work for you? Well, very simply, as I stated, it can put you in some type of lucid state. It could put you in some type of altered state of consciousness. It can alter your experience. It can help unhinge some of your creativity. Things that might come out only in dream, you might be able to tap into while you're under the effects of sleep deprivation. But it's very dangerous to drive. I mean, you can just faint. You're very susceptible to fainting, I'm sure. And once again, this is all simply from conjecture, personal experience. This is all anecdotal and burp, by the way. This is all anecdotal by my personal experiences. But I do know that once you start getting into your 40, and by no, I mean I do think, so I'm open to debate. I do believe, that means I'm completely open to debate. I do believe that when you get into your 40s, this can be kind of dangerous in connection and in conjunction with other things, such as bad eating habits, not drinking enough water, you know, not being hydrated. And in my experience, it could lead to, you know, like being flabby and but poor skin and things like this. So it's not so great to do as you get older. Now, of course, I do not deprive myself of sleep by choice. At some level it is a choice, but it is not something I sought to do. Oh, I'm going to stay up and complete Zelda. That didn't happen. That wasn't one of those nights. This was another work night. Yesterday I had hoped to be finished with the We Talk Games episode 8, which came out, and I'm very happy with it. I was quite concerned about this this episode because it is so different. It starts out, we are live at a convention,
and I'm just doing man on the street type of stuff. And believe me, I mean, there's no, you don't do any prep work for that. So everything that's happening, I didn't know. I'm not a reporter, you know. I don't do this for real life. I mean, I host the podcast at GoGo, and even that, I don't know what to do with that. You know, I can only do so much. If it was all my show, well then, you know, I'd be shirtless and probably pantsless in many of the episodes and doing incredibly outrageous, crazy things. But it's not my product. I'm given full rein of what I can and should and am a part of, you know, the video work, the audio work, those types of things. I'm given pretty much full control of that. There's very little criticism, good or bad, that I get regarding those creative elements. But with so on that. But as far as interviewing goes, even with my interviews on We Talk Games, We Talk Games, I could have some notes laying around. I can have, you know, some dates so I don't sound like a complete moron. But I'm by no means any type of interviewer person. I'm not even a public speaker. Although I do have a lot of podcasts that would prove me wrong, I guess. I just am a musician, and I like to tell stories, and I like to, you know, dance. I'm a song and dance man, like Andy Kaufman, I believe. But this We Talk Games 8 was very interesting to make. It was also very interesting to edit, and it was an incredible effort to edit. It contains hundreds and hundreds of edits. Well, maybe not hundreds and hundreds, but it contains at least 100 edits. Because of the nature of how it was recorded and everything else. So there's a lot of funny stuff going on. In fact, anyone that downloaded it within the first 12 hours of its release got a little extra bonus Easter egg somewhere in there, and I have a free no prize on the Wiggly's World of Media message boards, the bulletin boards. Just go to wigglysworld.com, and you can click on the message board section there, or wetalkgames.com, click on the bulletin boards, and be a part of that community. I really hoped that anyone that listens to this show, I was hoping for a one-to-one correlation with people that would be on a message board and people that listen to the show. You know, I'm not asking everyone that listens to the show to donate or do anything like this, but I would hope that you'd want to be part of that message board community, even if you only go there once or twice a year, or, you know, a month, once a month, or do something like that. Post a comment, say hi, say who you are, and, you know, then you could come and go as you please. It's not like something you have to maintain, like MySpace or a Facebook or something like that. It's my personal message board. I don't sell your emails. I don't do any of that type of business. So, and I try to run a pretty fairly secure ship. I do change my passwords. I have very complex passwords. They're comprised of lowercase, uppercase, punctuations, and numbers. So, I try to run a fairly tight ship. I've only been hacked once, and all the good that did. I got hacked for, you know, a couple minutes. But nonetheless, I was hoping for that. But instead, we have like 107 people on the message board. And that's, it's not ruining my life. It didn't keep me up last night. That certainly wasn't it. But I would just like to see that happening. So this We Talk Games 8, what an adventure that was. What a lot of fun to edit. Had a good time. I hope the content was interesting. I hope it was listenable there. I mean, it was a rough record. There was a rough record parts of this. Certainly all the live stuff was kind of rough, since, you know, I was there to try to mingle and sell T-shirts and do that type of thing. So interviewing I interviewed a lot more people than I thought, and I had to keep a couple people out due to the material that they were speaking of there. And I had to add a lot of people down because you don't want to hear 19 people in a row talk about Batman. I mean, there's only so much you could say. But it's still pretty funny, and the smoke was on there. I've been talking about the smoke a little bit here and there on different places I've been speaking, and it was neat to see him, and I'm glad he came up to our table. Eric the Smoke Moran. And like I mentioned on the We Talk Games, the interview that I did with Noah Falstein was my favorite interview I've ever done. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, I loved talking to Tommy Tallarico. I thought we were going to keep in touch there, but, you know, I guess he's kind of busy, even though what he says. And definitely the same thing came out of Nolan Bushnell. You know, call me back. And maybe that's my fault, because I did not call him back. I texted him like a prepubescent, poodle-skirted, she's 16, she's beautiful, and I'm going to jail. I'll be out in a couple of years. See you now. I'm not going to go through all the songs. I know you're expecting me to. Well, she's just 17. Mop Tops, hey, they're coming back. Let's hope not. The Mo, no, we don't need that. And I think I showed my ass enough during the interview section at the beginning of the show, not knowing what Zelda was. You know, I have no problem showing my ignorance or my mistakes or anything like that. Definitely not a problem there. Now, like I said, I opened the mic. I started doing a lot of other things, transfers and all this other business. I need to get out your emails and address those. Sleep deprivation. So it can help. I definitely, there's this part of my life I call, I guess, you know, I did the attic recordings, and I guess I consider this the attic years, the attic period, but it was definitely the period of my three girlfriends is another way that I refer to this. And this is when I was seriously dating three girls, and I loved them all deeply, and I was juggling all of them. They all knew about one another as well. None of them were crazy about that. Maybe one and a half of them were. They didn't mind as much. But they were all dynamite chicks. I mean, they were great girls. I mean, wow. And I was very, very happy at the time. It was one of my most creative little stints. And I really did not sleep. And, you know, everyone hears that and they go, oh, I bet you didn't, because Rambo. No, I didn't sleep because I was really creating a lot. I did all those attic recordings, which was about, I would think I did at least 40 or 50 songs. Many of them I don't have anymore. Many of them are on tapes that I would have to really work do some incredible backflips to get to pull off of the analog tapes that they're on right now, because it was one of these recorders that recorded all four tracks on, well, all of them do that, but it recorded all four tracks simultaneously on one cassette, and it did it at a accelerated rate so that it could be of a higher sampling quality. And so for me to yank those things off of there without a recorder that does the same type of speed and method would be very difficult, because that would mean that I'd have to put it into, you know, dump it off a cassette tape into some type of digital media, and then take the tracks that are going backwards because they're on the other side of the tape, and not only speed everything up by a certain percentage, which I would have to figure out, but I, you know, I'd have to also invert that audio so that it was going playing backwards and at a different rate. So it would be an incredible amount of work for me to do that. And I don't see that in the cards for the near future. But, I mean, I was a very, very creative at the time. I did a lot of pastel work. I loved it. I never worked in pastels before. I did this, what I think it was a dynamite picture. It was the only one I really did, I think. It was a big, a giant pastel piece. It was my take on Alice in Wonderland. She was about 18 years old. short blonde hair, nude, naked as a jaybird. And she was standing, I think she might have even been shaved. Shaved review. And also, and I don't mean her mustache, her beard, actually. And she was holding a cucumber that had, I think it had a price tag hanging off of it. So I, you know, this was what I mean about it can really aid in creativity. And that was my take on Alice in Wonderland. That's the only Alice piece I ever did. And I might have had sex with that pastel. No, I did not. But I know one of my three girlfriends did get that at the time. And that's only a problem with that, three girlfriends, because you want to give, and you want to just keep giving. But I never had a higher appreciation for women than when I had three girlfriends. I was so nice to each and every one of them. I didn't take any one of them for granted. Like can happen after you're dating for a while. You become very comfortable with people. They become you. And as harsh and critical as you are on yourself, you can express that outwardly to other people in when you aren't in using your full conscious mind. And that's a sad thing to happen. That's where the terms you only hurt the ones you love and things like this that all come from that type of environment, that type of social interaction that unfortunately occurs in humans. And going against that is difficult, and it can be done. It can be done. You can get to a point where you never yell, or if you do start to yell, you will quickly catch yourself. And that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work. But you know what? Is it worth it to you to never yell at other people again? I mean, well, I yell at people. I yell go, and I yell, but I mean, I yell nice. You know, I yell Larry King. I don't yell like a mad person. I'm, well, mad in the sense of crazy, yes. But I don't yell like I'm upset with someone. I yell because I'm in love with them. I can't wait to hear what they have to say and to share their experiences with us and our listeners. I think that's called passion. But for me emotionally, for me relating to my special person, one-on-one monogamous with my special person, times three, I never felt closer to people. I never felt more in love. A different type of love, of course. You know, I never had the same type of love for any two people. But I never felt more of the feelings that I felt than, you know, that period. And that's not entirely accurate. That's not entirely true. Once again, it's very different sensations. But quantitatively, if I turn this just strictly into numbers, then, I think at that time, it was when I was most balanced. I was most balanced when I was completely and utterly used by everyone. And I need to be used. That's what I attribute to the failure of my second marriage. I was never used. I think I have something to offer, and you have to be with someone that is willing to take. That's me. I don't know. So, but I mean, using people is definitely, there's nothing wrong with using people as long as they know they're being used, they know what they're being used for, and they need to be used. And if they don't need to be used, then it's kind of bad. But you know, it's just like with anything. Hey, man, relationships are rough. But this relationship I'm in now, I'm not taking anything away from that. That's for damn sure. I never met anyone like Chiz, and everyone that meets her says, you know, nicest person that they've ever met in their life. All right, so let me go through this pile. And when I say I have a stack of stuff here, let me just give you a brief example. There's a a Regal Crown Club card that had to be taped because it split in half in my pocket. Here's a pile of unused wedding invitations. Here's like instructions for how I would print that. Here is questions about Full Throttle, GTI Club, which I didn't talk about this episode. Here is some laser ink small tent cards, a whole giant unopened Avery box of them. I was trying to get an Avery. Oh, the 5302s. That's a template you would use. Here's a Nintendo Power 2010 calendar, a stack of papers and letters relating to We Talk Games, and this show, Wiggly World. And here is some. Here is 4 stick-on Mario mustaches from, you know, Mario. One of them is missing. The fifth one is missing, which I wore. So let me gather together your emails. Let me just make sure there's nothing else. Sleep deprivation, stupid Obama. Yeah, he is a dope. We Talk Games 8. I think I mentioned everything in there. It was really cool also when We Talk Games 8 to talk to, as I mentioned, Noah Falstein. And, of course, Dave Grossman. That was kind of neat. It was very interesting. I had some sound problems with Dave Grossman. That's why that interview might not have been up to the involvement that many of the other interviews get to or portray or come across or whatever. I had a hard time talking to him because I was getting a lot of slapback. He was using a speakerphone. It was Skype, but we had problems with Skype before. The interview started 45 minutes late and all this other. Well, I shouldn't say 45 minutes. I meant half of 45. I meant it started on the upswing of. It started late. 25 minutes late, at least. 25 to a half hour. So, you know, that was doomed from the start. But I really like what we talked about. It's just that we didn't really hammer on games a lot. And I think that's just fine. You know, I think it's fine. I think these are people that we already know their product. You know, we already know their product. It would be nice to know what inspired their product. And, of course, it's one question I forgot to ask. You know, what inspired him to do certain things? But perhaps in the future that will all occur. So I'm all good with it. And it's really neat. I loved, and I didn't play a lot of episodic games. I loved Full Throttle, though. I loved that game. That was such a cool game, man. It's still cool, and you can probably play that. You can probably play that, find that around. So jump on that. I also have to get all these podcasts for the Chikara that will be released during my vacation. I have to get them lined up and ready for the push, so I have to create various RSS feeds. I'm gonna get everything together, everything ready, have a couple fail safes. I'll of course be taking my laptop with me and stuff like that. But believe me, I will be having a vacation. Now I'm gonna be gone almost 2 weeks, I think, with Chizzy. We're leaving Tuesday and then we return the following Friday. So I'm going to have quite some time off. And out of those almost 2 weeks, I think I should have at least 4 days worth of vacation. So I think that's going to be amazing. It's something that hasn't happened in quite a long time. We're getting on the auto train going out of Florida. And we're going to spend some time in Sanibel the first week. We'll get married at the end of the first week. I picked up my ring at the pawn shop the other day. It's great. It looks like Chizzy's set a little bit and everything. And I was very lucky, very fortunate to find a size 13 in anywhere, actually. You usually have to order anything over an 11. So I was very, or have it sized, rather. So I was very fortunate that I found something, and it was great. And I got a pretty good price, but Jesus, talking about prices, holy cripes! I went to AAA today to get our Universal passes, and, you know, if you go to Universal for 1 day, I think it's like $70, but if you go for unlimited days during a whole week, it's $109. So I bought two of those, with money I've been saving and saving and saving and really don't have, as you know, as you may know, of course, subscriptions have just gone through the floor, which is, you know, I'm not upset about this. Please keep listening. Please keep listening. No guilt. This has nothing to do with blame or anything else. If there's anyone to blame, it's me. Maybe I'm not putting out enough product. I sure as hell think I am. Like I mentioned before, many, many, many times before, just the Jakara stuff would be enough for most people. And maybe even too much. But, you know, who's going to subscribe to that? You know, some people definitely, yeah, some people would. But really, it's an advertising piece in itself, the Go-Go, and that's to, the interviews, progressive stories, and I do all those. And the Go-Go's are, of course, to expose people to the product, sell DVDs, and then that's how you're supposed to turn over your revenue. But, I mean, I don't own Smart Mark Video. I'm not a part of that at all. But Mike was talking about some type of sponsorship or something. I don't know if that's ever going to go through. That'd be nice. I think that the Jakara Podcast Go-Go is enough of a quality product, even as it is. You know, I mean, I know it's not perfect. I know it's not exactly what would come out of a studio that would be able to put a lot of more man hours into it and a lot more professionalism and from soup to nuts, A to Z, from shooting to everything else involved, distribution and everything. And, you know, I realize that, but I think it's enough of a quality product that it should be attracting sponsors like friggin' hotcakes, I would think, because I think it's a real quality product. But, once again, distribution. It's not the, you know, it's not the most, I mean, TNA is, of course, trouncing us. Now they have television, but so is ROH. And that was before they had television. So, you know, I don't know what goes into, and I don't know if, also, I mean, you could get bumped up, you could pay to get bumped up. So, you know, who knows how much, how many real hits are real and how much you're paid and how much you know, goes into this, that, and the other. And that's neither here nor there. But subscriptions are down, of course, and so that is that was a part of my important part of my income. And now I have this tech job, and of course, this tech job I am completely independent, which means that I pay huge taxes. And this was before Obama was in office, and and also stop saying I love Obama and crap like that because. You know, I don't know this fella, and I certainly am not in love with him or enamored with him or anything else. It's just that, I mean, if I had two people to complain about, the former administration and this administration, it's the lesser of two evils, no doubt, so far. But I bought those, and we're going to be staying. So we're going to stay at Sanibel, get married either on Friday or Saturday, depending on the weather. And it's very flexible. The person that's going to marry us is very flexible with that. And it's just going to be us two. That's all, you know, us two and a person marrying us. And then we're going to head down to head up to Orlando on Sunday, and then spend the rest of the vacation at Orlando. And probably we're going to definitely go to Universal. I love Universal. Love the Spider-Man ride. It's my favorite ride ever. And we're going to stay at a Hilton that is right near or around the grounds or whatever of the, what do you call this, Dolphin Place, you know, the SeaWorld. So I thought, you know, maybe I'll see how much the SeaWorld thing is because I've been there before and I enjoy it. And I know Chiz loves aquatic life. She lives the life aquatic. You know, let's not fight it. Let's announce it like it is. And so I say, how much are those? That's like, once again, $70 for one day to one piece of this. Now, they also have this water park. And I've only been to one water park. Didn't have a very good time there. But I like to do things that I don't normally do. So I have been clearing off this credit card to try to get $2,000 worth of credit available on my credit card, which is the limit of that card. But that was supposed to be my part into this this honeymoon wedding package. She was going to pay for what she paid for, which was the trip and the things like this, and hopefully it's going to be the same amount of money. And then I was going to pay for the other things that would go on this credit card I've been clearing off. So I said, oh, well, you know what? And then, of course, the unlimited package for this to both sides of this park is $90. So I got that. So $420 in one day for a guy that watches, is careful when he buys a sandwich and stuff. You know, that's a couple of beads of sweat formed on my forehead as I was driving home. But it's all good, and you know, I'm sure we're going to have a blast. And even if we don't, there's no pressure on us to use that. It's there for us to do, and you know, hopefully it'll be. I think it's just having off and getting away from it for a while is going to be fine. And you know, having to log in and push up episodes of the Go-Go, I'm not worried about that. That's no big deal. But don't worry, they will happen. I will be here Monday, so I'll push out that Monday night's Go-Go. I'm going to work Monday at my regular tech job. My tech job called me in today to call me in yesterday, so that already put a crimp on getting the We Talk Games done by that. I seriously thought I was going to have it done by 8 o'clock at p.m. And then as I was editing and when I was able to start work on it, then I had to run another quasi-emergency for my mother. She fell over a pallet in a Walmart, and before you start seeing dollar signs ka-ching up in your eyeballs, she didn't fill out an incident report because she felt fine, as you do when your adrenaline is pumping after you fall and have a traumatic stress to your neck and stuff like that. You know, you get the adrenaline going, you don't feel anything. And then, of course, the next day she felt it all. But I got to say it again, Walmart, incredibly customer-friendly and customer-concerned. They said no problem. She just called them now to just talk about the people that helped her there and stuff like that, and that she didn't fill out a report. And they said, that's fine. I'm marking it down now. Here's a contact number. If there's any problems, call us. Everything good. So very, very cooperative, amazingly. So that's very nice. Another plus in their column. It's just like anything else. Where's the balance for when you draw the lines of war and say no? There's certain policies that will keep me away. There's certain things that won't. I try to treat it individually. I don't treat it as a giant whole. And definitely the people that work there, they need that job. You know? That job is probably good to them. Although, that's what Walmart gets in the worst trouble for, isn't it? How they treat their employees. Not paying them overtime and stuff like this. You know, get here early. We can't enforce it, but by law, we can't enforce it. But we're telling you that if you're late too many times, then you're going to have a talk with somebody. So, you know, those are the type of tactics that we poo-poo on them for. But, man, when you're a giant corporation like that, you're going to have problems like that, right? I'm sure. Still, I try to support. I try to support anyone I can support, especially independent free thinkers like the Wiggly World show. So, yeah. Everything is appreciated, especially just signing up for the message boards. Be a part of the community. So she did that there. Sleep deprivation, paying $400. Those are all things I'm a little worried about. A lot of other stuff has been going on, no doubt about it. It's been very, very busy around here, of course. But I did get the We Talk Games done. And after the personal things, I had to go run this giant box of like cheese curls down to my mom's Lioness Club with her dues and all this other business. I don't even want to get into that. But when I got home and started editing, I thought I'd be sure be done by 11. I get done and realize that there's a whole giant part in the beginning that is all the edits have been moved. About roughly 30 edits that I had made to the island, that company, that island, what you call, all the 30-some edits that I did in that piece got moved. They got pushed forward. So anything that I was trying to cover up and get rid of and skip over and stuff like that was now in it, and it was cutting off the end of the last complete thought. And that whole beginning piece, I edited separately, bounce that out, you know, and that takes like 10, 15, 20 minutes, and then imported that into the full We Talk Games episode. And if you didn't know, I use Logic Pro. Now, Logic Pro is for editing audio, songs. Now, even In A God of David is only 20 minutes. There's not a lot of songs that are 3 hours, 4 hours long, you know. So editing that type of scale show that has different segments is there's work involved there. And there's a lot of bounce time. So when I realized that this had all gone wrong, it was like 12:20. Fortunately, I listened to the playback while I'm coming up with all the metadata. Jesus, just doing the metadata for these shows with all the links to people's websites, to my Amazon store and things like this, the Wiggly Mini Mall. I mean, just that element of it is more than most people put in their podcast. So when I found that out, I didn't get to bed till after 4 o'clock, and I had to take a shower because I've been sitting in my stink the entire day. So that's where the sleep deprivation came in. Didn't plan for that. Had hoped to wake up bright and early, bushy-tailed at 8 a.m., and that's even, you know, sleeping in, and, you know, sit down, cut a nice Wiggly World. But I was wrecked this morning and had to run all these errands, including going into my tech job. So here I am. It's now almost 6 o'clock p.m. my time. And I will get to your letters now. I think that's all I needed to talk about. But I'm very happy with We Talk Games. Still think it's a quality product. Very big thanks to everyone involved with that. Kyle Von Kubik, Johnny Capcom. Oh, and I just realized, I just found out, I had gone under the assumption Johnny Capcom is working on some type of video release that he wants to also release under the We Talk Games umbrella, which I'm just thrilled about. If you know, if anybody wants to do this and put out something in conjunction with We Talk Games, now, of course, I'd have to look at it and, you know, see if it's really a good fit. And, you know, wouldn't be anything personal. It's just there's still a certain amount of control I would like to have over the image of this product. But if there's anything that anyone would want to do under the We Talk Games umbrella, I'm all for that. I'm into growing We Talk Games into mold it any way you like. We don't even know what this We Talk Games is yet. It's still in its infancy. It's still growing. I mean, the three T-shirt designs, that's something I would have never thought of, and I love them. Love all of them. Please buy them. that really helps us. I love that. I never thought I'd be interviewing people that shaped the games that we play. Kyle Von Kubik's been very instrumental in this, and now Johnny Capcom is making a little video project. And I thought he had told me he's working on something, and then Kinetic Card is a buddy of his that was in the, what were they called? We are Eternal. We are the One. We are the Last Man Standing. We are the Eternal. We are Legend. Legend, of course. It's getting everything confused that I am Legend, and we are, you know, trying to figure it out from there, work it from there. We Are Legend Productions, a great production company that I mean, that's the reason I contacted Johnny. I mean, Johnny Capcom's been in touch with me for quite a long time, but I knew that he was involved with that company. I knew Kyle was involved with Heroes of Gravitron. So those are the two people I reached out to initially with the concept of coming on We Talk Games Volume 2. So this Kinetic Card was also involved with that. I'm pretty sure. I'm almost positive. And so Kinetic Card released this We Talk Games, Volume 2, Episode 2, bit of on YouTube, where he took the audio of the segment of between Johnny Capcom and myself, where and then he set video and still photography and things like this to the audio, and it's amazing. It's one of the best reworks of my product that I've ever seen. So I'm very, very happy with it. But I thought that I got it confused, and I thought Johnny and Kinetic Card were doing this. Kinetic Card just released this on his own out of blue, out of nowhere, just whammo. He put this up. So I hope to see part two of that, and I hope that he's able to continue this, because I love it. And it only has 69 views. So if you go to YouTube and do a search for WeTalkGames.com, that will be the one that comes up first. And I think it's brilliant. It's very watchable, I think, for anyone. And very, very entertaining, very humorous. Now Kinetic Card just do the four-hour episode. There we go. I'll sit and watch that Woodstock style. And no one would get sick of seeing the same photo of me from Facebook on there for 4 hours. It would be a lot like my off-the-record bit. But I'm very happy with that. So thanks, guys. A lot of fun. We Talk Games 8. Very happy with it. And really excited about this this video project Kinetic Card started working on. I hope it takes off. You know, I don't think since going fishing, at least that's what I call that episode, where Rationalize put the Smart Wrestling Fan banter of our interpretation of the George Steele, Greg the Hammer Valentine movie project. And we just were winging, and then Rationalize set that to the actual footage from this fishing, something fishy, I think it was called. That's what really springs to mind. But I think this was, this is my new favorite. It's my favorite of the 2009s. I don't know if I mentioned it on the last show or not, but Matthew sent in a picture in response to my request for an animated GIF of Jesus. I remember talking about this, so if I did say this, I apologize. And I still didn't get my bleeding crown of thorn animated Jesus GIF that I had requested not too long ago for a free no prize. But he sent me one of Jesus on a cross. It was in GIF format, animated GIF format. And then Jesus' cross transforms into some type of rocket plane, and then he flies up to heaven on that. But that's gone now, too. I can no longer click on that. It's no longer available on that tinypic.com URL. I don't know if you put it up there or what, but that was a lot of fun. All right, let's see now. This is going to be kind of weird because I have four letters before me, and three of them deal with We Talk Games, I think. And I don't do We Talk Game. I don't do letters on We Talk Games. I tried to at one time, and then they just get forgotten because it's a monthly show, and I don't really know a place for them yet. Letter bag or whatever. They do. It definitely can influence what we talk about and discuss, but I'm going to read the letters in their entirety on today's show. But first I'm going to read this letter here, which is the reason I'm sitting down to do this show, because I think it's good to talk about. Here it is. It's called One Valid Point About Religion, and this is sent from our own Maverick. Maverick OM3 sent you a message on Facebook. He's still waiting for Magic Milkshake Machine to come back. You know, a lot of people are. I would love to bring back Magic Milkshake Machine, but I really need a budget for that. Magic Milkshake Machine was sort of just a name placeholder for what I have envisioned for that product. We never did that product yet. That product has not had, not even a Wiggly Time Traveler video. That was also something to just try to keep me active. That was something to try to get going. And believe me, the shoot for that and edit for that, I did that all like in one day, I think. And I had to force that for some reason. I can't recall. But I had a time limit on that for some reason. But that was something just to keep it all alive. But I've yet to do a real Magic Milkshake Machine episode. And I'd love to do that one day, and hopefully, if ever given a little bit larger platform to stand upon, that will happen. But there's things that need to happen for that show to really come together, and what needs to happen is a budget, number one, and number two, a lot of interns and people working for me. So let's read from Maverick. One valid point about religion. This is valid, remember. First, I want to say I respect your choice and view of religion. Religion does fix or helps one part of human suffering that science has not and probably will never solve, and that is the fear of death and pain of losing loved ones passing, and that is a belief in heaven or an afterlife, and even if it's delusional, and if that helps evaluate a little, if that helps alleviate a little suffering, then it's worth it. Okay, and I read it as it was written here, the one long run-on sentence, and the then instead of then, but just to let you know, you would use then. If it helps alleviate a little suffering, then that would make sense because it's dealing with time. You use than if you're talking about something being greater than something else. This is heavier than that. This is easier for me to do than that is. Even though that sounds like that might be dealing with time, it's greater than. So just remember greater than equal to, less than equal to. Anytime you want to compare a weight of something, then you would use than. If you're dealing with time, I'm going to do this, then I'm going to do that. In this case, you're dealing with time as well, because you're saying that believing in something delusional and going through and having all that suffering alleviated from you by believing in heaven, and then that means you no longer suffer anymore, because I believe in heaven, so I don't have to suffer anymore. It alleviated my suffering. I know he says helps alleviate, but that alleviated my suffering, believing in heaven. Then it was all worth it, because I did it then, and that means back then it was all worth it, my belief in something that didn't exist. Doesn't your advice hit deaf ears if you invalidate people's belief structure, thus singling people out? Well, of course, any belief, and let's talk about belief. Belief, as I alluded to before, belief means that it is open to debate. That is the difference between a belief and knowing. Beliefs are all open to debate. And when you have a debate with someone, you can sometimes alienate them if they don't like what you have to say and they're not open to listening to any other arguments, and they've made up their mind and they've closed off their mind and they are dogmatic or just being human. So, of course, you alienate people if you say things that other people don't happen to agree with. So let's get that out of the way. But now, number one, first of all, I don't want to seem like I'm not compassionate. Number one, death sucks. It sucks balls when it's someone that you love dies, or anyone dies due to an unusual circumstance or any reason, or just anyone close to you dies and you love them. Now they're not there. That part of your life is gone. That place that they filled in your life will never be back again. But so know that right away. I feel for you if you lost someone. But let's read this again. It says here, there's nothing, and not human suffering that science has not and probably will never solve is the fear of death and pain of losing a loved one. Now, number one, science has come up with ways to deal with pain. They've come up with ways to deal with fear. These are things that have existed for many, many years in modern science. Modern medicine, rather. I don't believe in taking them, but you definitely can, you know, have a Valium and forget about everything. Everything's good with you. I mean, there's definitely ways of changing your physiology. So saying that is number one, a bit not accurate. But I know the spirit of which you're saying this question, okay? I feel cheap even for saying that, you know. Of course we could deal with fear. I would have never gotten on a plane if I wasn't able to deal with fear by taking a little pill that made me not care and enjoy my flight. And I had a great time, and I wasn't loopy, and I wasn't not myself. I was still myself. It's just that it took the edge off, and my rational mind was able to come to the fore over my irrational fears of flying. So I've taken pills that have made me not have fear of flying. Now, fear of death, that's quite different. And the pain of losing a loved one is definitely something different as well. Fear of losing a loved one, passing on that, is a belief in heaven or an afterlife. And even if it is delusional and if that helps alleviate a little suffering, then it is worth it. Now, so what I get from this is that a belief in heaven makes you not worry about it, because when your family member dies, someone close to you dies, you can be, your suffering is alleviated because you believe in this magical afterlife. First of all, what I would have to ask, and this is only because I know Maverick, I would have to ask you where in the Bible it says that when you die, you're going to go to heaven. I just want to know what chapter it says that when a person dies, they go up to heaven. I'd like to see where in the Bible it says you go anywhere. I'd like you to show me anywhere in the Bible that says anything happens to you after you die except that you go in the ground. Nowhere in the Bible does it say you do that you go to heaven after you die. Nowhere. Now that's dealing with that part. Now, there's also a lot more to deal with in here, and it's just in the same passages. Fear of death and pain of losing a loved one passing, that is a belief in heaven or an afterlife, and even if it's delusional and it helps alleviate a little suffering, then it is worth it. Now, is that what religion really does? Is that what religion does? Just promises you a free ticket to some sort of an afterlife nirvana? Is that all religion does? That's all it does? There's no other things that religion imposes upon your life? I mean, speaking of poor granny, what about poor granny riddled with guilt because she snuck a plum at the grocery store? You know, she forgot herself. Just to take a taste test. Oops, I forgot. I didn't pay for that. I just stole. Thou shalt not steal. Even if she justifies it in her mind and says, I'm just doing a taste test. I give a lot of money here. I'm going to buy a whole bag of plums and some prunes and some raisins. And so I'm going to buy things I don't even need from here and give them my business. Even if she justified that as not a theft, you don't think that her years of attending Sunday church and saying her rosary bleeds and all this, you don't think that somewhere in her heart she feels this pain and pressure? I hope God didn't see that. Religion doesn't just promise you an afterlife. If that's all religion did, I mean, why would I have any contention with it at all? I don't come on here and say, you know, if Humpty Dumpty really did fall off a wall and got all cracked open, maybe someone could glue them together, and I really have a problem with this, and I, you know, if that is not what religion isn't just this fantasy world that people believe in, and old ladies believe in, and people close to death believe in, and stuff like that. that's not what all religion is. If that's all religion was, I wouldn't be doing these shows about it. Just another fantasy. I don't have an opposition. And I'm very tired. I mean, I would never. I don't walk into a hospital and, you know, see preachers at the bedside of people with half their body chopped off, giving them their last rites and everything. I don't go in there and say, hey, there's no heaven. Hey, you know, you're believing in fairy tales. There wasn't even, there's no proof of even a historic Jesus ever. And there's never, ever, 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 never, ever been any proof of a God. Any way you look at it. Now, I don't do that. It's not my bag, man. I come on my podcast that says A Wiggly World. It has my name right in it. My name is the second thing after a, which sometimes you could even put at the end in parentheses. And this is where I talk about my problems. My problems are people that don't think about what they believe and questioning my own beliefs and questioning what I see and appreciating what I see and looking around and appreciating what I see. And right now, I don't really appreciate too much of what I see because I see a giant mess and I like to just get a giant garbage bag and put everything I own in there. But then I wouldn't have that cool plush guitar that has hands and legs for some reason. It's been anthropomorphized, but it doesn't have a face or anything else. Just a guitar with arms and feet. And I love that thing. And I need to throw it away because I have too much junk, but I just can't see myself doing it. But that's what I do. I mean, I don't just come on here and bash this or that. There's some serious reasons why I deal with this stuff. It says, you know, and I don't want to misquote George Bush. George Bush. Yeah, he did say George W. Bush named Jesus as his favorite political philosopher at the December 13th Republican debate in Des Moines. Des Moines. Yikes. Favorite political philosopher. So I guess he did like socialism. You know, that is why I speak out against religion, and especially Christianity. I speak out a lot about Christianity. I don't even speak out about it. I'm the biggest proponent of Christian philosophy that I know of. I read more passages from the Bible than most other podcasts out there. And I never say, I hate, well, yeah, I guess I do say that. But I mean, I just say what's in there. I just read it right there. Bang. I know sometimes it's rough when you know, read the philosophy, the writings of your philosopher, and he never wrote anything. So, I mean, it's kind of silly, all in all. And by the way, you know, I've done many, many podcasts on death, and I think I've there's plenty of resources on how I address that. I don't think I've ever been disrespectful of anyone, but also the contention, the insinuation that somehow believing in anything but reality will help a person grieve and help a person cope with pain and help a person cope with fear. And by believing in some type of complete fantasy, something just entirely made up, how that could possibly help someone, I have yet to see that proven to me, how that could in any way help anyone. Now, if you truly believe that, then perhaps this comforts you in some way, and that's all fine. But it was Epicurus, and I spoke about Epicurus before, 300 years before the creation of the Jesus literary device. 341 to 271 BC, Epicurus, he asked this about God, and of course he talked about death, about suffering. In fact, on the fact about death, he said, "Why should I fear death? If I am in being, if I am, if I exist, if I am, then death is not. If death is, then I am not. Why should I fear that which cannot exist when I do? Death cannot exist in me if I exist, or else I'd be dead and not know it. So why fear that? But even Epicurus realized that the hardest burden about death is the fear is the sensation of loss. And listen, all you have to do is look at the animal kingdom and just realize that, you know, animals deal with loss as well. How many times have you seen elephants protecting a dead elephant? Its dead child. You know, just staying there with it and just incredibly mournful is the only way to describe it. And same with chimps. They have no idea, why isn't my baby moving? And so too with humans, much, much deeper, as far as we know, much deeper sort of sense of self. We are able to express ourselves in more abstract ways. So how much more is our loss that we feel? But as I, you know, I've consulted with many, many people online and offline about death, it's probably one of the biggest topics asked to me. And what I do is celebrate what I remember about that person. And especially I have a lot of non-theists and atheists and non-believers and things like that ask me, how do I deal when people come up to me and they say, well, you know, he's in heaven now and they're with their husband and with their family and things like this. And the way that I deal with that is not to direct that I don't direct that. I don't address that directly with my answer, and I don't avoid the question. I don't do any of this. What I do is understand what the sentiment of what the other person is telling me is, and that is that you know, they only want the best for everyone involved in this situation. They only want everyone to be happy, and they know that you can't really be gleeful when you've lost something so dear to you. So they're trying to be kind and be compassionate, and they're expressing that the way that they have had things expressed them, perhaps in their childhood, what they have been exposed to, and things of this. They perhaps haven't thought it deeper, or maybe they have. But what I do in a situation like that is I understand what they are trying to convey to me, and how I reply is by simply simply bringing up one of the fondest memories I had of being with that person, you know, driving somewhere with them. It could be something so mundane as and innocuous I remember he gave me my first tool. You know, I remember we used to stand in the shop, his basement. He had a little tool shop set up down there where he would fiddle around and fix things and build wooden, you know, whatever the person did. I would talk about fond memories I have of that person and how they were a great person and why I miss them. And that's what I would add to that. That's how I would respond to that. I would not address that sentiment directly. I would not shoot it down. I would smile. I would not, I won't acknowledge it, but I won't go, fiddlesticks, ridiculous. No, I would simply share with them as they are sharing with me. They're sharing with me their ideas, whether they believe them or not, or like I said, whether it's a reactionary thing, just like saying hello to someone, you know, how you doing? You don't really care how they're doing. Hey, how you doing? I don't know. Who the hell cares how you doing? I don't really want to know. You know, these are just things that are part of our interaction. They're part of human communication, and they things that have lost their meaning. So all I would do is I would once again just bring up my fondest memories of that person, and I don't see anything. If you want to alleviate the pain of loss, for me, There's nothing more freeing and burden removing than knowing that death is a part of life. You can't live without dying because that's all part of the cycle. You die at some point. And realizing how that piece of me is missing now that I loved about that person. Realizing that is my selfishness that is paining me so. That deep hurt that is within me is my own selfishness because I'm not going to have that comfort in there anymore. That peace. Now nothing will ever replace that peace of how I see myself as this giant thing that exists here. And I know that piece is not going to be filled in. It's going to always be there. And that is where I will keep those memories of that person. Nothing is more liberating to me than to realize that how much I cared about that person and how fortunate I was to share those special moments with them. Maybe there's regret that I didn't share enough. Well, then learn from that. Go in and call and do the 333. Call three people that you care about. Contact three people that you care about three times a day. In some manner. Whether you actually do contact them or you just think about them in your mind. Or you write a little note to them and send it to them sometime in the future. You know, reach out. Reach out so that regret can also be gone. We hold on to too much baggage and shit, man. We hold on to empty ghost shit, it's called. I apologize to all the 2 and 3 year olds listening for saying poo-poo. I meant poo-poo, kids. But I mean, we hold on to this poo. And it's ghost poo. It's not even real poo. It's not even like we're lugging around a turd with us. It's just this emotional poo that doesn't exist. It has no meaning. This whole thing about forgiveness and all that. I don't have the power within me to forgive. Yes, I can say I forgive you. Does that pacify you? Well, I don't have the power to actually have given you that forgiveness. I'm sorry. I'm not taking it back if that helps you along. But if you did something that offended me and you needed me to forgive you, don't do that thing anymore. Or talk to me about why that doing that thing that offended me is important to you, and then we can work around it. I never have to forgive you. We can move forward on anything. Anything. I got a call from a relative today that I hadn't talked to in, I don't know, a few years, you know? Probably exactly 6 years. Everything was cool with me. You know, they felt like they needed to apologize and all this, but I had nothing to forgive. I had nothing to forgive. Now, there may be certain exceptions to this, you know. There may be certain exceptions to this. But asking for forgiveness, too, can be incredibly hollow. I'm sorry I molested you when you were a child. Oh, my God! Oh, then, okay, as long as you say you're sorry, that's good. No, man, that needs a lot more steps to be cool with that person. And not forgive them. I mean, I guess you could if you want to throw that into it, but I mean, that's a lot more complex. There's a lot more things that would have to be in line for you to be cool with that person again, you know, and have them in your life. Because, listen, even if someone says they're sorry for whatever it was, and we don't have to go to that type of abuse scenario or anything like that, but, you know, people always say, well, how can I ever trust anybody again? How can I trust someone? Trust is easy. You trust someone. Because even if you trust someone that has never, ever screwed you over ever and ever, they might. They probably will sometime in their life. That's one of the first rules I learned when I was a youth and coming of age. I realized that everyone in life is going to at least screw you over, and I would say an expletive here, but I'm in much more, I'm in much better control now. Someone eventually in life, no matter how much how close they are to, how kind they are, how everything, at one time or another, they're going to screw you over and probably screw you over big time because, you know, you're so, a lot of connections to them. And this is just going to happen, you know, and, that's just the way it is, man. And it's just all because we live in, we all have our separate ideas, we all have our separate perspectives, all about perspective and everything else. We all live in our own worlds, our own universes, because that's all we can live in, because that's how we perceive. Now, we could be in tune with other people and everything else, but we're not going to see everything the same exact way. It's just impossible. So at some point, you probably are going to screw over someone, and they probably are going to screw over you, and that's something I learned early on. Now, as far as trust goes, like I said, there's nothing. Now, if someone continually is late for something, well, it's not that I'm not going to trust them anymore. It's just that I'm not going to depend on that to come to fruition. Okay, I trust them the same as I have always trusted them. There's nothing anyone can do to earn my trust, okay? I trust everyone. If someone goes against me, then I don't depend on that to be the way things are going to go down or happen or whatever, and I make contingency plans or whatever. But trust is really something that cannot be earned or it just has to be given. It's to be given freely, and or don't give it. That's all. But you can't really earn it because there's no telling when someone is going to break that, and then that's going to just cause more problems. But you know, I am not alone in any of my questioning of this. But and Epicurus said it so eloquently. I mean, this is eloquently. He said, "Is God willing to prevent evil but not able? Then He is not omnipotent." Is He able but not willing? Then He is malevolent. Is He both able and willing? Then whence cometh evil? Is He neither able nor willing? Then why call Him God? And this is a Greek philosopher during the Hellenistic period. Hellenistic period was very influential on the literary device of Jesus, and that's what I'm going to call him. I'm sorry if it, and I hope that doesn't insult you, but to me, so far, where was Jesus born? In a book. That is a anachronism that I will continue to admire. And, you know, I mean, it was a joint thing, but that that is something that definitely came about that I think is incredibly true. You know, where was Jesus born in a book? That's amazing because it's true. We have no records of Jesus being born anywhere, dying anywhere, the incredible events that happened surrounding his death, Herod sending out for all the did I say Herod? I guess I was citing the story it was pulled from. I was right. Herod was New Testament. Pharaoh was Old Testament. Okay, and he was talking about Moses, and this is just retelling of those stories to try to fit the type of Jesus each author was trying to construct here. But I mean, Epicurus, his query still goes unanswered. If you can answer that. If you can answer these queries, the things that Epicurus asked himself, if you could answer that, is God willing to prevent evil, but He is not able to, then He is not an omnipotent God if He cannot stop the evil, and He has the power to do it. If he does have the power to stop the evil, but He isn't willing to do it, then He is malevolent, meaning that He wants to do, he's just as guilty as doing the evil as those doing the evil. If he's not willing, if he has the power to prevent evil, but he doesn't do anything to prevent it, then he is committing the evil. He is malevolent. Is he both willing and able? Can he both prevent it and he is and he is willing to prevent it, and he is able to prevent it, then why is there evil? Is he neither willing nor able to prevent it? He can't do anything, just set it in motion. He can't prevent it, and he doesn't want to prevent it. Then why do you call him your God? And, you know, Epicurus, during Hellenistic period in ancient Greece, once again, 300 years before we created the Christ character, he was mostly referring to the gods. You know, of course, there was monotheism, but there was also polytheism. Polytheism was quite in fashion, no doubt about it. But even 400 BC, even before Epicurus, Democritus, you know, he sought contentment. He was a guy that said everything is composed of atoms, atomists, even though it wouldn't be until recently that we would be able to even measure their effects and things like this. You know, in our people that are still alive today, and this was 400 BC, that's 2,400 years ago, everyone. And he also thought that everything existed forever. You know, we're talking about thermodynamics there. And I'm also very pleased with some of the questions going down in the Wiggly World of media message boards, especially in the Wiggly World thread. Fantastic, great stuff. I like how some of the stuff goes down. I mean, it might not be answered the most tactfully and scientifically accurate and everything like that. But Pascal's Wager recently came up, and I'm not going to dwell on it because I pretty much want to enter it in the threads. But, you know, Pascal's Wager, once the Greeks began to travel the world and meet other cultures. Now, remember, when Constantine came into power, he changed the pagan worship into worship of the new Jesus, the new mother and child. He turned a lot of the old science places, a lot of the old philosophical institutes, and he turned those into churches and churches to the Virgin Mary and those type of institutes. And by the way, I mean, this plunged arts, science, and philosophy and culture at the time into what is now referred to as the Dark Ages. By the way, that's the result of that. And now I'm not saying that is what it will always happen, but that just is what happened to happen there when you just begin to be dogmatic and things like this. But once the Greeks began to travel the world and meet other cultures whom were not already Christians, I mean, how could that be? How can there be any other cultures around this earth? God made the earth, you know, 6 days. Only took them. Pretty good. It's a lot of work. Got it done. Probably stayed up. Didn't go to bed for a while. Then he rested on the seventh. But, you know, who wouldn't? It's tiring. But why would other cultures that weren't in this Greek era, weren't exposed to the sand god, this desert god, this very local tribal god called God or Yahweh or Jehovah or Elohim or things like this, why wouldn't other cultures also know about God since he created the entire earth? Wouldn't he even, you know, clued everybody in, not just some people living in a desert? So how could that be? You know, the Lord of our world is only a local phenomena, not much of a worldly or universal God there. And this was problematic. But Constantine, definitely put an end to anyone's problems with that, by killing them and force. So speaking of mythology, I watched Batman, Superman, Public Enemy. I don't know if you saw this yet. All out action, man. I really, really, really liked it. And Power Girl. Hoo-wee. But let me tell you, this is an adult cartoon. Don't let have the kids watching this. I mean, immediately, I think there was an anal sex joke or something going on in the beginning, right from the start. Yeah. It's coming back to me a little bit. it was supposed to be like a David Letterman type guy, and the colloquialism is getting stuck in the eye with a red hot poker, right? I mean, that's what you usually hear. It was more painful getting stuck in the eye with a red hot poker. But they bleeped it. He bleeped. It was like getting bleeped in the bleep with a bleep or something like that. So that it sounded like some type of anal rape, you know, sentiment there. But it clearly looked like it was animated as getting poked in the eye with a red hot poker. So here we are, Batman, Superman, Public Enemy. Lex Luthor is somehow elected president. He's a criminal. Public Enemy, number one, you know, that guy. He's elected president because times are so bad, the economic situation, trouble on Wall Street, the housing market, everything that reflects what was really going on earlier in the year. And now, you know, let's elect a criminal, a known criminal president, and he's public enemy, yo, yo, yo. I don't know. You know, it's kind of weird, kind of funny, those parallels, what people might think. But you also get Captain Atom, you get Starfire. She's just an extra in this. She's a non-talker. I don't know why she wouldn't even be in the credits because she doesn't say anything. I don't know why they put Starfire in here. She looks great, but she's not used very much. Katana. Who else is in here? Power Girl. And, Black Lightning, who is LeVar Burton. And Major Force, I think, is the other dude who I never saw. I never saw this guy. I think he was Major Force. I'm not too sure. But wow, what a interesting movie. The villain tie-in with, I just got done reading JLA Avengers, which was a tremendous crossover that I doubt will ever be done again. George Perez did the art, and it's the Justice League of America, and the Avengers all in one book. And there's a lot of time shifting going on, so it's different. It's different iterations of both the JLA and the Avengers, since they both have a high turnover rate. And so at some points you get all these spatterings of villains. I mean, it's cool because, you know, Mr. Miracle's in there sometimes. Just crazy types of villains that you haven't seen in ages. And we get to see a lot of these crazy villains here in this Batman, Superman, Public Enemy. And when this movie is half over, there's still more surprises coming. So it's really cool. And you know, I mean, I guess as long as you haven't read the graphic novel, it's going to be a surprise to you, which was a surprise to me. I haven't read it here. Now, the third act really falls apart. I wasn't too crazy about that third act and what's going on there. They really stayed true to the characters that they were using in here. And even, you know, they stayed so true to them. But then in the third act, they do not stay true. There is a kid that they seek out. And when you find out what they name this kid, it will piss off anyone. Because, you know, now they totally just ruined everything, blew everything. They really had me, and how they really maintained the integrity of these characters that they built, these myths that they've built. But it ends pretty good. It still ends all right. It ends okay. But the whole ride, just getting there, was really worth it. But like I said, Hell and Bitch they use in this movie, and the blanked in the blank by a red hot poker. It's kind of leading. So, check that out. I'm going to wrap it up here. Jasonia finally sent me a... Oh, I'm sorry. This isn't Jasonia. Jasonia. Here, I'll do his. Jasonia. Here it is. There's another Jason that did. That's why I got confused. And once again, I said, these are all We Talk Games letters, but I'm going to read them here. Hey, pal. How are you? Because I'm going to be gone for a little while. And who knows how long it's going to take me to get back into doing podcasts, especially this podcast, because as soon as I get back from the vacation, I have to begin getting ready for our little celebration that we're going to have, the celebration of the wedding. And I'm going to have a lot of video editing to do for that. I'm going to have a lot of a set list to build and stuff like that, because I'm running all the music. I'm going to show a video, I hope, of the wedding and stuff like that, and of our trip. So I'm going to have a lot of work to do to get that together. Wiggly, my pal, how are you, sir? I haven't written anything for a long time because I feel that you have been doing a bang-up job with A Wiggly World and We Talk Games, and my contributions are not needed. You have pulled some amazing guests for We Talk Games, Walter Day, Billy Mitchell. Wow, yeah, indeed, and on the same show, and the second appearance of Walter Day, and, you know, we can give him a buzz. We got Walter Day on speed dial, no doubt about it, and it wouldn't be out of play. I could call Billy Mitchell, too, but it wouldn't be really that warm of a conversation, probably, as it would be with Walter. Walter's, he's a genuinely good fellow, you know. So after catching up on all your We Talk Games, I realize you are missing out on talking about the things I work on in the gaming world. That would be achievements. Sure, I play games for fun, but I also play many retail games as I can. As many retail games as games, and to complete them in terms of game score and achievements, I have a goal to try to complete as many retail games as I can and hopefully become one of the leaders in the world. I am at 46 complete. Since your show covers so many different areas of gaming, from classic to pinball to WiiWare, I thought that make your show more complete, you could include achievement talk, because there are many of us that care about achievements. The problem is achievements. Trying to drill out how to unlock achievements. This is gonna require some legwork. Now, if you want to do a segment on achievements, I'll give you 5 minutes. Tell us what the best achievement to go for, or even if you want to send it to me. You know, I would definitely ruin. But I cannot take time to do this, or else I'm not going to be able to play any games. I'm not going to be able to edit the show. I'm not going to be able to try to do research for. I mean, it's bad enough I have to do research for the guests, but let alone trying to figure out. I don't even know how the hell I would do it about all the achievements that are out there. That would be kind of rough. From those of us that suffer through games like Open Season just for the 1,000 points, to those of us that just want to rifle through as many games as they can, picking up achievements along the way. And also, you know, this goes against a lot of my concepts of why I play games. I would never do this, Jasonia. You know, for me, it's all about the ride. You know, the fact that I got more points in Wolverine than I did about anything else, that didn't have anything to do with it. I just wanted to complete the game, and I didn't unlock all the achievements, and I really had no compulsion to go for any more achievements, because to me, I was satisfied that I beat the game and I unlocked a couple of costumes, and that's all I really needed. I have to say that the achievements have revitalized my desire to fork over my shillings for the new generation of games. And that's true. I mean, they definitely give you more bang for your buck if that's what you're trying to do. But I have games on the shelf that I probably will never touch. So I bargain hunt to begin with. And, that $5 may sit on a shelf for eternity. Takes more energy for me to dust it off than I ended up paying for it in the end. There's a huge achievement community, and I believe discussion about recent games and their achievement difficulty, enjoyment, and time to get would go over well. Well, if you listened as well, I did comment on the new South Park game and how easy that achievement was to unlock. So I have a feeling that is just a money exchange for achievement, a game in disguise. I, of course, recommend you bring me on to talk about, achievements, since I am on top of the new games and what they bring to achievement world. Shameless self-promotion. Definitely, Jasonia will do that. The only requirement for being a part of the We Talk Games, correspondents. is that you have to be incredibly flexible because things have to happen like boom, 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 and tentative dates can get moved around. This new way of gaming has brought many people a different way to approach playing and buying video games, and I believe that this topic would be a wonderful addition to We Talk Games. And also, you know, you're going to completely say F you to the people that are doing those indie games for the Xbox 360, because I don't think you could build points into those. Then you just build a game, points. It's called points. You know, you pay $6. You click a button and it unlocks, several thousand points for you. I just thought I would share, much like that South Park game, I just thought I would share my views. Feel free to write back and any feedback if you have nothing to say, no big deal. In either case, keep up the great work on We Talk Games, and I look forward to many more months of the Wiggly View on video games, your friend Jay Sonia. Very good. Thank you, man. Thank you, man. And all my addresses are, if you want to write to the show, you just put Wiggly at and then the show address, you know, wetalkgames.com, wigglyworld.com, wigglysworld.com, realtrapdoor.com, poo-poo on a stick. No, I don't own that yet, and I never will. But any wiggly at any of those .coms, and it'll get to me. Wiggly, could you possibly do a feature on an upcoming We Talk Games about installing dual boot Linux on a PS3? Thanks, Phil. Actually, if you listen to episode 1, we just say that Yellow Moth installed it on his system. And then I think I talked about it on... I talked about it somewhere. And I installed this real simple kernel that you didn't have to reformat your hard drive. But it's very simple. You would want to do this before you go and download the entire world to your PlayStation, because you're going to lose all that off your hard drive. Because when you click on Sony's little gimmick there, install another hard drive, that usually reformats your drive, and so you end up losing the formatting of your disk drive. That's how they recommend it. Now, once again, I did install this little Pebble kernel. I can't recall what it was. I think it was called Tiny Kernel or something of this nature, and that allowed me to boot off it. I got some GUI and everything that happened with that, but I soon disabled that because, you know what, I don't really want to use my PS3 as a Linux box. I have so many beta testing boxes around from different jobs that I did throughout the years that I can install Linux on, you know, anything and everything. And I have Linux on a lot of old free systems that I've accumulated over the years. So I really don't have a need or desire to put on my PS3. I think that the cross browser is plenty good for me. It allows me to do all my streaming from my digital media servers and everything like that. So I don't really have a need for it. But I'm sure that there already exists many videos on YouTube that can walk you through this much better than I ever could. I recently did replace my hard drive, and I posted that on my Twitter. And that was a very easy process, and I did want to quickly bring that up on We Talk Games, but I didn't. And the only thing I want to say there is, it is so incredibly easy. Number one, just order a Serial ATA 2.5-inch drive. That is a new Serial ATA for laptops. And pretty much it's going to fit in there. As long as it's 2.5-inch, don't get you 3.5, because that's for your, you know, that's not going to fit. So get a 2.5-inch serial ATA drive. I don't know if there's any size restrictions. I don't think there is now with the new system software 3.1 and above, or 3.01.1 or whatever it is. And that's the only other step that's needed now. Before, it used to be if you turn your PlayStation, and this is with the original PlayStation, I don't know how the new ones work. I don't know how the drive bay is enclosed or whatever, or if it's accessible. You know, sometimes they take those feature away when they bring out more compact versions. But for the old one, all you do is you turn it over, turn it upside down, where its feet are, and you will see, and this is vertical, and you will see that there's a little thing in there. You stick your finger in the right-hand side, I believe, I'm pretty sure, and you push it to the left and lift this little cover off. Now, it might go the other way. One side has you have to push it to one side and then lift up, and then the whole thing will come out. If you have a mini screwdriver, you'll be able to get it out with no problem, or very strong fingernails. And then you remove that, and wham, there's your drive in a little carrier with one big blue screw right there. You just unscrew the big blue screw. You pull the tray out. It has a little handle that comes up. You pull the tray out. You unscrew the hard drive from the tray. Put your new hard drive in that tray and slide it back on in. Put the screw back in and put the cover back on. Bang, it is done. Now, when you start your PlayStation 3 back up, you're going, and you can find a 320 gig hard drive for, you know, probably around $50, $50 or $60 tops. Don't pay more than that. So right away there, 320 gig, that's huge compared to what you can get, you know, 120 gig. it might be pretty hard to fill up 320 unless you put a lot of videos on there. Then it's going to fill up quick. Mine got filled up just on demos and stuff. And also PlayStation makes it very easy to copy your movies over to there. And a lot of games used to get installed on there, so your hard drive space can fill up pretty quick. My 80 gig drive filled up quick. And I don't, you know, I don't play this every day. I don't put new games on there every day. So I'm very casual. And I filled it up. So I put the, first of all, I backed my hard drive up. Now, you don't have to do that, and you certainly don't have to do that if you're going to install Linux. But I did that. I backed it up to an external hard drive. You just plug in a USB, and you go to your system tools and back it up. And that's very simple. And the only thing, and I did this because I don't feel like re-downloading everything from the store. Now, you don't have to back up anything. You just re-download things from the store, and I'll re-put in all your settings if you feel like it or whatever. But backing it up was quite simple. And it did take like an hour and a half because I have, like I said, it was pretty full. Oh, close to 80 gig, probably around 60. And maybe around 40. For some reason, it took that long. So you do that, and when I put the new hard drive in, start it up, here's the only problem that happened. Because I had already updated my system to the newest system software, it asked for the something that could boot the 3.0.1 or higher software. Now, that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't been constantly doing my updates. What will happen is you put a new hard drive in, you start your system up, it'll say attach one of your controllers via USB cable, you do that, and then it'll say press the PlayStation button to format your hard drive. But now because I had the system 3.1 software on there, it asks for something that had that software update on it. So all you need is a thumb drive or anything that could plug into the USB, and you have to put... This is very important. You download the software update. You can do a search on the PlayStation Store for it. It comes up like it's the first hit. And you just do a search for that software update. And you click on download. And you take that UDP file, that update file, and you put it on a flash drive, some type of USB thing or whatever. And you create a folder on the root of that USB drive that says PS3. Inside of there, you create a folder called update, and I believe it's all capitals. And then you put the update inside of that directory. So it's like down two directories. And the instructions will be there in case I got them wrong. But that's all you need to do, and then you just stick that in your PlayStation. It says, I need to look for the 3.01 or higher update. And then you just click X, and it looks for it, finds it on your USB, USB drive, and then it says, hey, you want to format this hard disk? Yes. Bang, you do it, and whammo, you're all good. You're good to go with your new giant hard drive. Incredibly simple. It's super simple. And then after I put in the new hard drive, and then I restored from my backup, and the only thing that didn't come back to me were a few of my themes. I just had to re-download a couple of those. I don't know why they got corrupted, but they did. But everything else is good. The games, the saves, the demos, the everything. Yeah, download. So Phil, I would love to do that, but I think that's better for a video. And I would say, look on YouTube. There's probably a lot of people doing this. And, you know, it really depends on what flavor you want to install on there as well. I don't know if Ubuntu can go on there yet or not. If it could, I'd be all about that. That'd be kind of cool. But like I said, I already have so many Ubuntu systems that I really have no need to do that. But thank you very much for your question, and I'll be sure to look into this. And like I said, I don't read the letters on We Talk Games, but they might inspire me, and I might work them in somehow. So I'm not writing that off at all. And this one in from Fat City Slim, We Talk Games package. Just wanted to thank you for the kick-ass We Talk Games shirt and bumper stickers, the pin, and the awesome inspirational sign. When life gets tough, so do I. And the one-of-a-kind Kyle Von Kubik autographed show badge were a great surprise. Yes, each care package that comes to you from the We Talk Games Pro Store, available at WeTalkGames.com, comes with secret pack-in gifts. You made my week. Great show last week with the Billy Mitchell. I also salute his tie. Keep on keeping the shows stacked. We will, Fat City Slim. We will, and I hope that this show did not disappoint, although it was quite different. But that's what it's all about, man, being different. If you didn't know that, now you know. And that's my smoke-ism of the day. Hey, everybody, listen. I'm going to go on a vacation. I'm going to get married. So thank you all very much for listening to A Wiggly World. I hope that you enjoy the things that I produce, and I hope that it's good for you too. I'm sad that Mr. Mutant Larry never got back to me to get a reservation for our celebration, our wedding celebration, but, you know, he lives in Ohio. I was going to pick something out of musicalley.com. That's the new name for music.podshow.com, Music Alley. I just did a search for Trapdoor and noticed the Trapdoor's on here. Yeah, I'm not sure that's enough of a name change. That's like saying, hey, I'm not going to call myself The Beatles, I'm calling myself Beatles. You know, there was The Beatles, now I'm just Beatles. Eh, well, what are you going to do? You know, I can't. I don't need to find out about this now. Well, it'll still be there when I get back. You know what? I'm going to leave you with a Trapdoor song that I definitely don't play very much. And I love this song. I hate this recording of it. But I think that doesn't prevent the great song from coming through. And I hope that you agree. This was one of my first real big ideas. I mean, Project Y came before Project Snowbird. But Project Snowbird was my real first delve into a hardcore disco style with some clever lyrics on top. What I thought were, when I say clever lyrics, it's just because I don't know how else to describe them. But I really took my time to integrate disco mentality lyrics with what I believed at the time was conspiracy and cover-up type of lyrics. So, and this is about the Project Snowbird, which was the Betty Cash story. Yeah, Betty Cash Lundrum case, which I still don't know everything about. I know that it never was a UFO of any sort, and this is what I found out when I first started trying to look into UFOs and things like this. The more research I did, the more I realized that there was no sign of extraterrestrials whatsoever. But it was seeming like there was a lot of experimental things by the government. And I don't mean Big Brother government conspiracy type of things. I mean real physical types of things. It looked like most of this was testing of remotely piloted vehicles. Meaning that there was no pilot inside. Oh, this thing was doing things that would kill a normal pilot. Well, there's no pilot inside. It's a freaking remote control little, you know, kite device. You know, it's, well, not a kite, but I mean, It's one of these things that we use now, these ravens and all these other types of gimmicks that we use for surveillance and stuff like that now, these remotely piloted surveillance and even vehicles that can deliver payloads and stuff like that. So, I mean, that's what I started uncovering, and that's what eventually led me to realize that there was absolutely zero proof of UFOs. It really was all either misidentification or out and out hoaxes. I started out a lot more open-minded than I am now. Now, I am still open-minded to any type of substantiated claims of anything. But I am not open to just, there's a lot of flags that go off that scream of things I've already looked into and found to be hoaxes or misidentifications. So it's not that I am not still open or interested in these things. It's just that everything that has come out since the 80s, late 80s and early 90s is boring to me because it's been done before and it's been exposed before as not true. But this was a song I wrote about, part about the Betty Cash story, and I weave it in here, not saying it's true or false, but I weave it in here with other disco lyrics, and I just think it's hilarious. So hopefully the poor recording of this song and my poor vocal performance doesn't take away from a song that otherwise I really, really enjoy. And I would love to hear performed by a much more competent a group of live performers. I mean, the majority of this is all just straight out my keyboard. That being said, the bits that were added by the live guitarist, the bits that were added by Horatio Proctor did a great organ on top of this. Love it. Love his Stevie Wonder accentisms on here. Great. Really, really helped move the song along and progress the bass line. But what I mean to say by that is that I would love to hear a live band, a real progressive Yes type of live band, pull this off in full disco style. I would love to hear Dweezil Zappa on here. You know, I just think that would be amazing. And a much stronger vocal performance on my part and the other singers. I think we sort of let this one down. But, you know, you're paying for studio time, and you can only do what you can do and before you run out of money. So here it is, my adios to you for the short run. Look forward to talking to you on the other side. I'm looking forward to this adventure. Thank you for listening once again. I'm Wiggly, a Wiggly World.
I said, have you had an accident with your lorry? And he said, no, I've been attacked. And I said, what with? And he said, a spaceship. And I said, oh, goodness me, there's no such a thing as a spaceship.
Thank you. minute, ladies and gentlemen. I think something is happening.